Hello, folks. Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast, joined by Stoney and Will Birchfield. I'm Justin Rogers, and a big matchup on deck for the Detroit Lions this week with the Minnesota Vikings. But before we even dip into the NFC North tilt ahead, let's address the elephant in the room, and that is the season-ending loss of Aiden Hutchinson, boys. It's all anybody has been talking about since the shellacking they put on Dallas. And, you know, they've so far leaned on largely in-house options, or said they're going to lean on in-house options. They went out, added a practice squad poaching. Some guy named Isaiah Thomas, I don't know, probably rings a bell in this town.
Zeke!
And we will, we can dip back to that a little bit, but, you know, the bigger talk this week, certainly probably burning up the airwaves over at 97.1, has been trade. I'm in the camp that Brad Holmes does need to do something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it is the Max Crosby's or Miles Garrett's of the world. I know that's the easy answer. I don't know if the bullets are in the chamber for that one per se, but you know, Will and I thought it would be good to maybe talk about some more realistic names on the trade market and you know, what it might take to bring one of those guys here to Detroit.
Hey, first, one thing on Crosby, you know,
absolutely.
The bullets could be in the chamber all they want, but unless the guy who's got the worst hair in the NFL, the owner of that team, Mark Davis, he said today that he ain't going anywhere. Now, obviously, guys can change their mind. We have a few weeks before the draft, and that's why before the trading deadline, that's why everybody says, oh, they should go after this, go do this. Oh, sure. But, I mean, it's a cliche. It takes two to tango, and I don't think, as bad as the Raiders are, they want their guy, the person who's most influential in that franchise, that they're going to get rid of him.
I assume Tom Brady's making all the calls there now?
Maybe.
I think the other highly unrealistic one, aside from Myles Garrett, that has been mentioned by some as possible or potentially less costly, that I don't buy at all, is Trey Hendrickson. Like, do we not realize that Trey Hendrickson has more sacks over the past five seasons than Max Crosby? In fact, he has the third most sacks over the past five seasons, and only Myles Garrett and TJ Watt have more. And he also plays for a team that's in the middle of its Super Bowl window. And I know the Bengals might be 2-4 right now, but I have a very hard time seeing Cincinnati subtract from their team their best defensive player in the middle of what feels like a 4 to 5 to 6 year championship window. And I know they've had contract issues in the past, and he requested a trade back in the spring, but he is signed for 2025. And I've seen this notion floated around Twitter that he would be much more affordable than a Crosby or a Garrett. I'm wary of buying that line of thinking. Trey Hendrickson is going to cost a first round pick if you want to get him, and then probably some. In fact, I reached out to someone in Cincinnati today who covers the Bengals. And I was like, there's no way they trade Hendrickson, right? And he said, well, depends on the offer, but no. Which is another way of saying, yeah, if you got three first round picks, toss them their way and they might consider it. But I for whatever reason, I wanted to mention his name because, A, he is as elite a pass rusher, maybe not as complete a player, but as elite a pass rusher as any in the NFL, and will have a price tag in a potential trade that reflects that. So I don't think that one is realistic at all, at least in my opinion.
It's funny because I got more information written down on my little cheat sheet on him than anybody. I mean, he's got, 44 and a half sacks.
He's a stud.
Pretty good.
In his, you know, Cincinnati career, he's a three-time Pro Bowler. He's been top 100 in the NFL the last 4 years. I mean, he's a great player. Plus, as much as I would love him, the Brown family is, you know, historically, they don't do this kind of stuff, especially mid-season. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people we would love to see. let me throw the next name that might be somewhat popular out there because he has familiarity with Williams, the Lions defensive line coach, and that's Harold Landry of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And that is going absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny name to bring up because I think you know, I've got a decent history of mock drafts when it gets down to the brass tacks of picking a guy for this franchise. And Landry was the guy that I mocked the Lions the year. I believe they went with Lakin Tomlinson and Landry.
And where did he go to school? Who produced Harold Landry?
That's right.
Boston College. BC.
There it is.
Flew to University.
Factory in Chestnut Hill.
I think, you know, we could probably say this about a lot of guys that could potentially be available. And I think you're on the right track there. You're looking at a team that is floundering, could be looking to rebuild, to trade assets for draft picks. You know, Tennessee certainly fits that mold, but you know, Landry is in that edge turner category, you know, slighter build, not a big run defender, more about bending the edge as opposed to plowing through guys. And so schematically, you know, I struggle to see the fits. Kind of the same we've talked about with some of the other guys out there. Reddick obviously being another one, like, you know, for whatever other problems he has, like, it's just schematically not the type of guy the Lions are looking for with what they do right now.
Yeah, I'll toss one out, and I think I mentioned this Monday during Lions review, but you obviously go right to teams that would potentially be selling, and the Patriots seem like they'll be in that mode in a month. And I think Dietrich Wise is a guy who's worth taking a look at, mostly because he could fill the Davenport role pretty capably. I mean, he's 6'6", he's 280, which is actually a little bit bigger than Davenport, and he rushes with the same physicality. Now, it doesn't at all replace Hutchinson, but I do think he fits, to your point, Justin, the style of their defense, and in particular their pass rush. And he's an 8-year vet. He's in his age 30 season. He is durable, and that's something that this team especially places a premium on. He's played all but two games the last five seasons. He's a team captain, so you know they'll like him from a character standpoint. He's a pending free agent who's only got a $7 million cap hit this season, so you could prorate it for what, probably $3.5-4 million. Affordable, and he does have,
yeah, maybe not even that, Will. I mean,
sorry,
there, I said maybe not even that much.
Yeah, they're maybe not even for that. The maybe signing, like 3 or 2.5.
Yeah.
I don't know. But 12 sacks the last two seasons. He's got 2 in 6 games this year. The pressure numbers aren't all that impressive, and his production is a little bit on the decline. But again, he would fit their defense, he would fit the culture, and he would fit the physicality that Marcus Davenport gave them. And I do think that for all of the obvious angst about losing Hutch, they also lost a really important, violent piece in Davenport. And maybe Dietrich Wise, for like a guy that might cost a 6th-round pick, is worth keeping an eye on. He also had the greatest quote today as I was doing some research on him. He was asked about the Patriots losing, and he said, "In order to win, you have to stop losing." So I
sign him up.
That was profound and belongs in the in a fortune cookie in some Chinese restaurant in a strip mall somewhere. But maybe Dietrich Wise is a guy who we should be monitoring ahead of November 5th.
You know what else would help him win is getting traded to the Detroit Lions.
Yeah. Perfect segue. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a couple other names on teams that are, you know, downtrodden, if you will. You know, I think this one's probably been mentioned out there on Twitter quite a bit, but Za'Darius Smith in Cleveland, kind of in that same ballpark, good frame for what they do. Older contract is digestible, if you will, and you actually got another year with him.
He knows the division.
He does know the division. And look, I'm calling the Jacksonville Jaguars. I saw what maybe some of you others saw a couple weeks ago, where one of the ESPN reporters mocked a trade between the Lions and Jags for Trayvon, and only cost them a 4th rounder. It was amazing. And that got wow, absolutely skewered by Jags blogs, and rightfully so. But
yes,
you know, if you call up and you say, "Hey, that's a talented player," right? Like you say, maybe a 2nd rounder plus. I don't know what the plus is, but it's probably still going to get you hung up on, but at least you ask on a player, because that's a young talent. There's long-term potential. But also on that roster is Eric Armstead. And I'm bringing that name up because the Lions looked at him in March. You know, they were interested, and Jaguars gave him a pretty sizable deal. I think it boiled down to about 3 years, $43 million, but 12 of that was a signing bonus. So now you're talking 2.5 years for $30 million. Again, that is something you can live with. You're going to need a Davenport replacement beyond this season anyway. And so, you know, that's maybe a call I look at to see if the Jags are interested in talking about those numbers. The downside with that is they have to eat a pretty good size. Both the Jags and the Browns in those scenarios would be eating a pretty good size signing bonus. I don't know. The Browns might need all the cap space they can use to eat another signing bonus in the near future. I don't know. With their quarterback situation, but, you know, those are the type of names I think the Lions need to be looking at. These guys that can produce, aren't expensive, maybe are a little bit older, so they're not going to cost them as much draft equity. To me, that's what makes sense most for this roster right now.
You mentioned the Patriots. I mean, it's more of a position, like you mentioned, for more of a rush edge and not a
I'm ready for
violent.
It.
Yeah. And that would be Josh Uche,
yeah,
who signed a one-year deal. Is he somebody that you think they'd be interested in, or do you think he's too one-dimensional?
I think he would be for this reason. They also have to replace Derek Barnes. And Derek Barnes was playing a huge role on this defense in that strong side linebacker position. And for that same reason, like I put Dennis Gardeck on my list, who the Lions saw against the Cardinals.
Cardinals, yeah.
Three. Who would give them, by the way, two of the best heads of hair in the NFL between Anzalone and Gardeck flying around out there. But he's played mostly in that Sam linebacker role for the Cardinals. And we saw what he could do as a pass rusher when he racked up three sacks against the Rams, I think, in week two. And he's a late bloomer, but he played the more than he ever had last year and turned that into six sacks and a whole bunch of quarterback pressures. And I think he's someone that, unless the Lions see Trevor Nowoski take – you know, a pretty substantial step in the next month that they could go look to, or someone like Uche, because it's not just Hutch and Davenport, but it is also Derek Barnes, who is probably their third most important edge rusher, even though he was playing from the linebacker position. So, yeah, I think a player like Uche or Gardeck also makes sense on the trade market.
Well, in that vein, what about Ojulari with the Giants? I mean, he's only 24 years old. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He's got three sacks this season. That team's going nowhere. So, and they need some draft capital.
Yeah,
with all these guys, and the opposite is true with another name that people have thrown my way this week, and Devin White, you know, I'm not seeing the versatility, right? Like, it's either one or the other. With White, it's all off the ball. With Gardeck and who was the other name we mentioned here in this mix? Uche, you know, those are strictly on the ball guys. And so, you know, you're not replacing Derek Barnes per se with a guy that, you know, can play on ball, off ball, because that's really was the unique part about him, was the versatility aspect of it. And you're not getting a pocket crusher. Man, I was not familiar with Gardeck before I started researching the Cardinals game, fell in love with the player really quickly. Certainly from an attitude perspective would fit here. And yeah, I mean, you'd get the great chance of two great heads of hair getting tangled in a collision in the backfield. You know, there's just it. And here's the other thing. It's really tough with the trade deadline 3 weeks away. So many teams competitive. You know, we thought the Bengals were in some ways done at 1-4, but no, they won. Now they're 2-4. Now they're a game out. And look at their schedule. It's Cleveland. It's a struggling Philadelphia team, and it's the Raiders the next 3 weeks. So the odds that Cincinnati is right back in the playoff mix here in 2 weeks is pretty damn high. And so, you know, furthering the conversation about Hendrickson just not being realistic. And I know I mentioned that name in our last podcast because, you know, was spitballing in the moment of the
we
didn't really know what, you know, it was so shocking. But, you know, looking at it closer now, it just doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah,
we mentioned Riddick, but we really didn't break down why it probably wouldn't fit. He's a whack job. Now, unless Drew Rosenhaus, his new agent, unless Rosenhaus fires him already, talk some sense into him, he is like seems to be the antithesis of what this team's all about. Now, you can have one or maybe two guys like that in a team that has a great culture. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, you know, he doesn't have the versatility where I would take that chance. Would you?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't recall the last time the Lions had the quote unquote like locker room distraction. It certainly hasn't happened under Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, and it feels like that would threaten to be one. I wonder if the biggest changes they make defensively aren't personnel, but schematic. I mean, do we see Aaron Glenn blitz more? I mean, he blitzed frequently his first season and even into his second season. And he has
blitzed. Well, even this year, to be honest.
Yeah, but he has blitzed less frequently each of the past three seasons as he has discovered more guys. Oh, we got a guest appearance. Who is this Jamie or Sam?
Sammy. Yeah.
Sammy. Yeah. Yeah.
Sammy.
What kind
Sammy.
Of dogs, Tony?
It's a mini golden doodle who's deaf.
Oh, okay. So no matter how loud we yell,
yeah,
he will not come to us.
Yeah, yeah. Can you?
Oh, hey, a little bit like you.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you guys.
No, I was just going to say, Jay Raj, like I think they've blitzed less with each season because he's discovered more guys that can win one-on-one up front. Well, you just lost the best of those guys, and maybe your other was Davenport, and he also has more faith than ever in his secondary, and I think he can have conviction in sending more rushers, knowing that he has maybe the best safety tandem in the NFL, and he's got three new cover guys in Terrion, Carlton, and Amik, and so maybe it's blitzing more. I would expect to see more stunts for sure. I think that's unlocked Aleem McNeil a lot in the past. Well, certainly in the Dallas game, but even before that. So I just wonder if it's more schematic than it is personnel related.
It's certainly that's what has to be right away, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you look at the Dallas game in that second half when after Hutchinson went out. I mean, that's what it was, and they didn't have a lot of pass rush success. And what they did have was the two interior guys that we know are. Bringing it this year in Levi and Aleem. And, you know, before we hit a break here, I feel like we need to hit on this Aleem extension. And I know we all expected it. We expected it to be sizable. I had projected it, I think, in the 4 for $88 ballpark. It came in a little higher, which has kind of been my trend has been missing low with this rapidly rising cap. And, you know, that's an adjustment I need to make. But, It's just yet another guy they've got a deal done, and I think it's really unique how this team, in an era where teams just seem to fall apart so quickly, has built this foundation, this core that seems like it's going to be here for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
And I don't buy that they did it now because of what happened to Hutch.
Oh no,
they've been working on this for a long time. So I don't buy that narrative at all.
That would be a bad business model. Just extend your players as soon as your other players get hurt.
Right.
If anyone, I mean, like that could be an agent going, "Oh yeah, like it could be over tomorrow. Like let's take the money on the table. Let's get this thing done." But that's all it takes. I mean,
right.
You could be working on it for a while, but it just takes two motivated parties, and that thing can come together overnight. We've seen that with several extensions. Frank Ragnow's comes to mind. They come together quickly when it's time. And you know, this one was the next one. And I think Will and I talked about, you know, pending extensions in the future, but you know, their core is so solid, and you know, really does feel like they've built a contender here to last for the next several seasons, and that's just so strange in the NFL.
And you got to give them credit because I'm not saying they're setting the market, they're ahead of the market, where if they would have waited on all these guys, it probably would have cost them a lot more.
No doubt.
Now, Aleem got the bag. I mean, he did. He now is he will be the fourth highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL. Now, that could change by the time his extension kicks in, but to me, it's well-deserved. I mean, obviously, a lot of the focus on this defense – on the defensive line goes to Hutchinson and the Reader addition, but Aleem McNeil has maybe quietly turned into one of the better all around defensive tackles in the NFL. I mean, he always was a run stuffer. And then ahead of last season, he slims down and leans out in a big way and discovered and unleashed more of his pass rushing capabilities. And you're looking at a force on the interior now, and the spotlight is going to be on him more than ever now with Hutch out, and he and Reader really have to deliver in a big way. But I thought it was interesting. We talked to him today, and I asked him, you know, when did you feel like you were a core piece of this team? Obviously, you arrived in 2021, but when did you sense that you were part of this foundation they're building? And he said it really wasn't until last season. Like, I didn't love what I did my first 2 years, didn't love my production, made the changes physically because of that. And I felt like last season I was really making meaningful plays for the first time. The team was depending on me for the first time, and they pay him because of that. And the message is being sent loud and clear. You come in here, you do your job, you ball out, and you're going to get the bag. And there's more guys in that line for sure.
Well, one final thing on Hutchinson. I know it's popular discussion on 97.1 The Ticket, and I don't know how you guys feel, but can they win? If they don't get somebody – one of the guys that we mentioned, okay, not even the high echelon guys that are pipe dreams. You really do you think they can win the Super Bowl if they remain as is, so to speak?
I do. I don't think that one guy defines a roster outside of maybe the quarterback position, but it got harder. I mean, it did, and there's no reason to shy away from that. You know, that he is their best defensive player, or tied with Brian Branch, depending on who you talk to in this podcast. But you take away that, and even in the second half of the Dallas game, you could sense how much it meant. So they've got to find some way to generate pass rush, and I don't know if it can just be schematically. I don't think they're talented enough to get away with that.
Yeah, my answer is yes, they still can. My answer is also that I consider them the best team in the NFL and the Super Bowl favorite, period, at halftime of that Cowboys game. And in the wake of Hutch's injury, I consider them a favorite to come out of the NFC, maybe one of the three or four best teams. But I view them in a much different light now. Everything has to go perfectly on defense from basically here on out to make that Super Bowl run. And that is possible because they made enough changes in the back end and they have an emerging linebacker in Jack Campbell. But I think what changes for me is their floor. Their ceiling is still a Super Bowl winner, but their floor shrinks, or their floor lowers. And it's going to be harder now to win this division and to make it back to even the NFC title game like they did last season.
Because, like, I can't imagine the Chiefs, as great as Mahomes is, winning the Super Bowl without Chris Jones. I just can't. And I think Hutch is in the same category.
Yeah.
Yep. You could feel that absence in the season opener last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got a sample size there. So Will and I, the guys keep talking to us in the locker room. I can't believe it either.
I'm not there to ruin it for you.
Yeah. We had to take a couple stabs today. Wednesday's a little chaotic, but, we convinced Graham Glasgow to chat with us. And, I think it was a pretty fun discussion, and, hopefully you'll agree. We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with that interview with Will and I talking to Glasgow right after this break. Welcome back to the Detroit Football Network podcast. As promised, we're going to go right into that interview. Will and I talk to Graham Glasgow, Lions center, former guard, two-time Lion. We talked to him in the locker room Wednesday. I hope you enjoy. Joining us on the Detroit Football Network podcast, special guest, not new to the team.
New to the podcast.
You do a lot of podcasts. Graham Glasgow.
Hey, folks. How's it going?
Yeah. I feel like where I want to focus this whole thing is just on friendship. Because this man came back to town to play for his friends, with his friends. And so who was your favorite character on the show Friends?
I don't really watch Friends, but Jennifer Aniston was pretty hot, so I'll say Jennifer Aniston.
We will accept that. I feel like you're more of a Phoebe, if I'm going to say. You got a little quirkiness to you.
Yeah, Phoebe's cool, I guess. Yeah. I mean, so Phoebe is not Courtney Cox, and she's not
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. That's.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm clued in a little bit, I think.
We've killed this topic already. That's good. All right, I'm gonna stick with the theme, though. What is your favorite activity to do with your fellow offensive linemen? What do you guys like to do when you hang out? Are you a hunter?
I don't hunt,
all right,
unfortunately.
Are they gamers?
Some of them are. Okay. I play with Colby every now and again, which is cool. Taylor plays, like, World of Warcraft and shit, and that's not for me. I'm not really a nerd like that, but he's been off that a little bit, but we still don't play the same games. But realistically, my favorite thing to do with the guys is just drink and eat, but we don't do that very often. So we don't drink very often.
Drink and eat one thing with the guys, and there were no restrictions as to what you could drink or eat. What would be the preferred spread for Graham Glasgow?
I like to go to Hyde Park with the guys and basically just order like almost everything. It seems like we just kind of order like almost what everything. And then I like gin and tonics, and I also just like a beer. You know, I get both of them at the same time.
Mix them up into one.
Yeah, not mix them into one, but in my belly they're mixed into one. But, you know, I just kind of like, you know, gin and tonic, it's the drink of the summer.
Yeah.
It's the drink of the winter.
Yeah.
Drink of the fall and spring. But overall, that's probably what I'd say.
Jared said that I think you guys went to Prime and Proper last year for like the O-lineman quarterbacks meal, and he said he has never seen anyone do to a shrimp cocktail what Frank Ragnow did do a shrimp cocktail. Can you take us inside the experience of watching Frank Ragnow destroy unlimited shrimp cocktails?
I just don't understand it. Like, I understand that shrimp cocktail is good, but like, there's only so much cold shrimp I can eat. Yeah. And that doesn't seem to be the issue with Frank. He was you just throwing it back, throwing it down there, you know, just slurping them out of the shells and whatnot. So good for Frank.
I'm going to ask a football question. Two defenses in a row, really, really aggressive and I guess designed to confuse up front in terms of the way they walk up to the line and put them all up front. How do you enjoy that challenge? Is it annoying? Like, what is it about these matchups that, you know, the pros and cons from an offensive line's perspective?
I think it can be annoying at times, but overall, I think that it's, I mean, I feel like we have a lot of guys out there who have played a lot of football, so yep. I feel like they can only do so much stuff out of that. I feel like, you know, I don't want to say I've seen everything, but at this point in time, I might have seen everything. But, I mean, it just comes down to, you know, how they run it, and I know that they're playing well this year. You know, they're doing their thing. So I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a good game.
Hey, Aleem McNeil just got $97 million, mm-hmm. good bit of money. You've had only seen him from afar before coming back here last season. What have you learned about him? You guys probably spar a lot in training camp, even sometimes in practice. What have you gleaned about his game, having played against him, that you didn't know about him just watching him from afar?
Well, I feel like Aleem, when I got here, was like a different player than what I had seen in the past, because I felt like the first, what would have been, 2 years, he was a little bit heavier. I think the first year we played, I was in Denver. I was hurt at the time. I think he played nose.
He did.
So coming here and seeing how much he improved, and I think he had lost some weight, which was, you know, I had no idea because I wasn't around him, but he's an amazing player. And not only that, I think he's just, like, between him and Panay and Saint, like, all those guys who have ended up, you know, getting paid a lot of money, they've, not only have they deserved it, but they're just awesome, awesome people and, you know, very humble about a lot of things. And I think that when it comes to putting in the work, you know, it's really cool to see Aleem get rewarded for everything he's put into it. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah. It probably, I mean, maybe speaks to the larger element of culture here. I mean, it seems like it's just at an all-time high. I don't know, from a player perspective, you know, how good is it to just come into work every day with the guys you have here, with the coaching staff you have here? You know, how much do you enjoy the job?
I would say I enjoy this more than any place I've probably ever been, you know, here the first time or in Denver. So I think that it's really cool to be able to be coming into a building where there's a lot of young guys who not only know what they're doing, but just go out there and feel like they almost act like they've been pros for 6-7 years. So being able to go out and know what to do and also being able to do it is incredible to be able to see, you know, between like just us on the offensive side of the ball with some of our younger players. And I mean, our defense is just filled with young players who go out and just play, and they're playing really well.
Is that a different feeling to wake up with every day when you're looking forward to going to work, to spending time with the guys that you're playing with? You've been on some losing teams, been in some tough buildings. Just how different does it feel for you to wake up every day loving the place that you're playing for and the teammates you're playing with?
I mean, don't get it twisted. I'm still tired in the morning. Like, I'm not exactly, like, excited to go to work.
Okay.
But I don't know how many people are always just like,
it's the most 30-year-old answer I've ever heard.
Practice today. Can't wait. But, I mean, when I get in here and I get to hang out with some of the guys, it makes everything a lot better. You know, I think that nobody wants to practice. There's a lot of the things about, you know, playing football that it's not everybody's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, when the guys that you're around are fun to be around and just good players as well, and you're winning games, those positives far outweigh the negatives.
On your rare off days, do your kids let you sleep in at all? Like, can you enjoy even the chance to sleep in?
No. Sleeping in for me is like 7:15.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna close this out with an important question because I can't let it go. Do you have a preferred gin or a preferred beer? Are you a lawnmower beer guy or are you a craft brew guy?
I used to drink a few craft beers in my day in college. And then I found out that they just didn't really taste good to me. So
you were being a poser in college and you grew out of that.
Yeah, I was being like a fake hipster. So okay. I was like
Kyle Mikey too much.
Yeah. But I felt like why would I want something that I'm drinking leisurely to taste worse? So that's kind of something that I, keep in mind. I like Coors Light, I like just normal stuff like that. And I actually, in regards to gin, there's one that I ordered that I really liked. It was called like Empress Gin.
Okay.
It's like purple. It's actually kind of neat, but, that's probably my favorite. I mean, you could always go with some Baumier Sapphire, but I mean, that's a little uppity.
I do not think that is an accurate statement. I'm also a gin guy. I like a lot of different booze, I'm going to be honest, but I respect the gin. I think you can judge the quality of a nice restaurant by the fact if they have a quality gin cocktail, because it's actually kind of underrated in how you can make cocktails out of it. But we were in training camp, Lions Raiders, out in Silicon Valley. Or not Silicon Valley, what is it? Napa.
Yeah.
And another writer and I went out to a craft distillery that made gins, and I learned that they make sipping gins and all kinds of fancy stuff. So, you can do a lot of stuff with gin.
Yeah, but Coors Light's pretty good too.
Yeah, yeah.
I would rather sip a Coors Light than some straight gin, to be honest.
Yeah, but fair enough.
Taste better.
Yeah.
Hey, another football question for you, believe it or not. We hear that the offense can still do so much more, and a lot of it seems like lip service. Like everyone says, no matter how well you're playing, 12 touchdowns last two games, 89 points, oh, there's still so much meat on the bone. Scotty Montgomery said today, like, the offense is nowhere near what it can be. What can it be then, and where can you guys, in your view, get better over the next few months?
Well, I mean, just if we're looking at last game, right, like we had two drives, I think, that kind of stalled out in the red zone there towards the bottom of the red zone. And we had one thing get pushed back because of a penalty, a delay of game. And then we ended up having the one where it was, if we didn't have guys downfield, did Panay score? Maybe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that would have been an extra, 8 points right there. I mean, I think that in a lot of ways, there's always meat on the bone in every situation. You could always look at that. But I think right now things are going pretty well. And I don't think that we are like getting caught up in too much of looking at what could have been, because I think that that's not always like a good way to go about things. But I would say that we all come in here every day and try to get better. So,
and you wake up looking forward to doing it.
I wake up every single day just looking forward about how I can practice and how I can do everything better.
Yeah, we got the wrap it up sign, but 60 reporting is eligible anytime soon.
No, I don't want to touch the ball.
All right. Well, thanks, Graham. We appreciate you.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, boys.
And that was Graham Glasgow.
That was fun. Graham's always fun.
He really is. And I'm glad we got a shot in at a colleague there. We made some beer jokes and some friends jokes. Real important football stuff. But look, you got
to be clear, we had tried cornering Isaac Ukwu, but he had Bible study, and so he could not join us.
It's a good excuse.
He's very good excuse.
Well, are there any two more religious people?
I will not interfere with anyone's relationship with the man above, but he does feel like an important player in the month ahead, maybe the months ahead. And we also tried to corner Sam Laporta in the other corner of the locker room, but he was going off to shower. Also,
he's
a pretty valid excuse. Justin did say we could just come with him, but he shockingly shot down.
Skipper told everybody
with you in the shower. But anyways, a long-winded way of saying, please let us know who else you want us to interview on that segment, because as you can tell, we can have all kinds of fun with it. A little bit of football, a little bit of off the field, get to know the players. So give us some recommendations and we'll try and track those guys down, preferably out of the shower.
All right, we're going to take another quick break here, and when we pop back, we are going to discuss the big, big, big matchup this Sunday between the Lions and the undefeated, unbelievably undefeated Minnesota Vikings. And we're back with the Detroit Football Network podcast. Remember, you can listen to this on the Odyssey app. That's free. Obviously, you can find it on all the places you get podcasts. Apple, Spotify, I don't know, CD Walkman, all the places.
Walkman.
Download, subscribe, do all the things.
8-track.
Yeah, all of it. All of it. Yeah, Stoney's listening to this podcast on 8-tracks. In his, I don't know, what are you driving, a Trans Am? Let's go a Trans Am.
No.
So,
a Chevy Blazer. See, everybody thinks I'm a big shot. I'm a Chevy Blazer, great car.
he's going to Rodney Dangerfield on us?
Exactly. I'll tell you. I got no respect.
We are off the rails. Look, guys, this week, I know there was a big matchup last week in Dallas, and the Lions answered the bell emphatically in that one. The Minnesota Vikings were able to sit back and watch that game. They were on their bye. They're going to be rested, recharged, and they were a team that did not look like they needed to be rested and recharged. They are 5-0, have gone from being picked to finish last in the division by Vegas to now, I believe, their over-under on wins is 11.5. And, you know, I spent a good deal of time looking at them Monday and Tuesday and kind of how they got here. And I'll tell you that the formula is really simple. They let Kirk Cousins go. They said, we're going to redo it on this position because you're 36 and tore your Achilles. And I get that. And they let Danielle Hunter go. And that was a lot of money they freed up. And what did they do with that money? They spread it out, not on a ton of star power. Oh, they gave Grenard a pretty good contract, but a lot of
Van Ginkle players.
Yeah. And it's working. They've got really, really good coaching. And it feels like, just like the Lions, talent just about everywhere on that roster.
Yeah, the defense to me is what stands out the most. I mean, obviously the focus goes to the job that O'Connell has done with Sam Darnold, and Justin Jefferson requires like 7 defenders to slow him down. But the defense and the pass rush in particular, obviously via the blitz, has been just dominant and relentless. I mean, they lose Danielle Hunter, as you referenced, A-Raj, and they still rank in the top of the league in pressure rate, in pressures, in sacks, they're third, in QB hits, they're second. It is a defense that is going to come after you all game long. I mean, that is what Brian Flores wants to do. In fact, their blitz rate is so much higher than anyone else's, and their number of blitzes are so much higher than anyone else's, even though they've only played 5 games. They have no shame in sending the house and then the house next door after the quarterback. And this is a huge challenge for the Lions offense, for Jared Goff, for Frank Ragnow, but also for those running backs in picking up blitzes, and guys like Parker Hesse and even Laporta and Brock Wright in providing extra protection. I think they're up for it, but it's a monumental challenge from a protection standpoint.
How long has Harrison Smith been playing for the Vikings? Is it from the 50s? I swear. You always think the guy's going to retire, and he's there every single year. And he's still pretty good. He still hits hard.
Yeah, all I can see is Golden Tate front flipping into the end zone in overtime as Harrison Smith nearly knocked him out of bounds before he got there. And I'm pretty sure, was that Caldwell's last season or Patricia's first season, A-Raj? You recall?
No, I don't think anything that happy happened during the era.
Good point. They weren't allowed to feel joy.
He has been playing since 2012. He is coming up on his 36th birthday, and yeah. You know, continues to still be a pretty good player. Maybe not a great player, but you know, still a very good player, and you know, guy that holds that defense together. He's a glue guy, as we love to talk about. But
another OG they have is Gilmore. You know, I thought that would be a perfect guy for the Lions to sign in the offseason, a veteran guy to help out with the, you know, with the rookies that the Lions drafted. But they brought, you know, Mosley back, and, you know, Gilmore still, he makes plays still.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's off to a really, really good start this year. And that's what I'm saying. Like, there's talent in every level of the defense. I love that. They added a linebacker in Blake Cashman. That's basically their Aiden Hutchinson. Maybe not that impactful, but born in Minnesota, went to Minnesota, now back to play for the Vikings. Like, I don't know.
I'm a
sucker for hometown kids playing for the hometown team. Always will be.
Yeah. I think the other side of this defense that's interesting is that they have given up a ton of passing yards. I mean, for as well as they've gotten after the quarterback, they've allowed the third most passing yards per game in the NFL, and it's kind of fascinating. They've allowed the second most air yards, and I don't want to get too deep in the numbers here, but among the other nine teams that rank in the top 10 in the NFL in pressure rate, and the Vikings rank first in that, have allowed on average 530 air yards. The Vikings have allowed 830. So to me, that says that when they blitz and the blitzes don't get home and they're exposing themselves in the back end, they're getting gashed for big plays in the air. So I think this is an opportunity for Jared Goff to continue pushing the ball downfield, assuming that protection can hold up, because this defense is vulnerable in the air. And I think blitzing is the one way they're trying to cover it.
And I read somewhere, I don't have the exact number, that I think Goff is third in the league as far as completion percentage or yards when he is pressured this year. So all the myth that, he can't, you just have to give him pressure and he crumbles. So far this year, that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, I would bet he's among the most pressured quarterbacks, too. I think teams, that's one way they've tried to rattle him, right? Like, mm-hmm. historically, he has struggled. I think most quarterbacks struggle with pressure, but he doesn't have the mobility aspect to escape it, so why not keep throwing the house at him? Will, I have to wonder how much of that passing stat is influenced by margin of victory. Mm-hmm. That is, I believe they lead the NFL in scoring margin over the five games. And so, how much of that is them playing soft coverage, up big late, giving it up? Stat, I believe it was Tim Twentyman from the Lions brought it to our attention today via a question to one of the coaches. They have not given up a touchdown outside of the red zone. Mm-hmm. So nothing longer than 20 yards in terms of scoring. I looked, they're ranked at number two in the NFL and one pass play over 40 yards.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
They are giving up quite a few over 20, but they're not getting totally torched. And so I just, not one to give fantasy advice, but I would be a little skeptical about starting a Jameson Williams this week, because I think it's going to be more like the Cardinals game in terms of the inability to even take those shots, just because they play a ton of cover two shell.
Yeah, and their run defense is really good too. I mean, I think about 3.5 yards per carry and under 70 yards a game. This is a stout front, probably as stout as the Lions have seen all year. But I think the way this offense has come to life over the past 2 weeks gives me faith that we'll continue to see that on Sunday. I mean, they're blocking their tails off on the ground. They're pass protecting like crazy. Kevin Zeitler is playing as well as anyone could have hoped he would in his first year here at age, 35, 36?
Younger than Harrison Smith.
Well, Harrison Smith is 97, according to Stoney.
Yeah.
You see them running the ball a lot to the right side behind that right tandem of Sewell and Zeitler. And then, you throw in Ragnow at center. I don't know if there's a better right side duo and then trio in the NFL. And I just think they can continue to lean on that on Sunday.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers. I was thinking, how do you beat this Vikings defense? And honestly, it's a lot of quick passes, but it's got to be smart quick passes, because the Vikings are just as apt to try to bait you into a quick decision where they're dropping somebody. You've seen that with Van Ginkle this year, but who's the Lions quick passing blanket? And it's Amon-Ra, right? And looking back at the games last year, 24 targets, 19 catches, 250 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, he was their motor that made this thing run last year. They scored 30 points in both those games, both wins. And so, unless they found a way to stop Amon-Ra with, this blitzing strategy, I would not be surprised to see him eat again.
Yeah, and on the other side of the ball, I mean, look, they have the best receiver in football in Justin Jefferson. Terrion Arnold, he had his best game, I thought, on Sunday, but I'm sure they're going to do everything possible to, have the greatest receiver in the NFL go up against a rookie. And the Lions, I don't know if they're going to shift coverages around. The question I have for you guys, do you double him every time? But if you do that, Addison's really, really good as well, as you know. So and former Spartan, and Naylor's having a pretty good season too. So I don't know what the strategy is. I would assume you have to double Jefferson every chance you can.
They doubled Lamb a lot. I know McCarthy tried to say after the game that it was every snap, and it wasn't. It was probably close to 50%. You know, there was some safety shading that way, which of course you shade the safety to the a top five receiver in this league. And I think you're going to see a lot of the same stuff. And, I would be more worried about them moving Jefferson into the slot. I think that creates a troublesome mismatch. I don't think Amik Robertson is as good as those other guys. He's good to make a play or two a game, but he's also getting cooked on a lot of routes. Lamb, really made him look silly a couple times. And so that's my bigger concern is what Jefferson does when they slide him inside.
Yeah. When the Lions played at Minnesota, I believe it was 2022, and they still had Okuda, and they matched Okuda up against Jefferson, but with like heavy safety help, almost yep. like bracketing help on the outside. Yep. And they held him that day. I just went back and looked to 14 yards. And I would assume that's probably Jefferson's lowest output since maybe of his career. And that was an Aaron Glenn defense. And that was a young corner who would have otherwise been mismatched just one-on-one, but they did enough behind him to corral Jefferson. And that spawned the comment the next week when DK Metcalf was like, well, he's not really playing one-on-one against receivers. And then DK Metcalf came in, and I'm pretty sure he lit Okuda up. But I think the way they defended Jefferson that game is a good preview of how they might defend him, especially when Arnold's on him on Sunday.
And the other thing about them is running the ball. And now, from what I understand today, Aaron Jones did not practice. He's got a hip thing. You know, who knows what's going to happen if he doesn't play. I mean, Chandler's pretty good, but he's no Aaron Jones.
No, that's been such a huge part of their turnaround offensively. I get it. Darnold is exceeding all of our expectations, and O'Connell deserves all the credit in the world for making that work. But when you give him Jefferson, right, you give him the best receiver in the league, but you also give him a viable run game, and you're talking about a guy in Jones that's averaging over 100 yards per game from scrimmage. Is an excellent receiving back, and he's averaging 4.9 yards per carry. Like, that just makes life so much easier for a quarterback. And I also am a big fan of Chandler. I was, I quickly peeped his stats today because I was curious, because I think he's underrated, but he's not having a great start to his year. He's averaging 3.5 yards per carry. The Lions run defense is obviously really good and much better, I think, or even better against north-south runners. So if Jones is absent, I mean, that would be a massive advantage for the Lions, no question in my mind.
This is another really big game for Josh Pascal, and he probably played the best he has this season last week. And with Hutchinson out, again, we start talking about how do they change things defensively. Well, Pascal's one guy who needs to continue to elevate. I thought he played well against the Cowboys, and I think that the essence of how he has to play shine through on, I think it was a run stop he had on Zeke down in like the red zone. And he like barreled through Pro Bowl offensive tackle Tyler Smith, just like put his shoulder in Smith's chin, blew him back and tackled Zeke. And that's exactly what this defense and this coaching staff has been asking Pascal to do for the better part of a year, year and a half. Just play physically, play forcefully, use all of your 6'3", 285-pound frame. And I think more and more he's beginning to do that. They'll need him against this like versatile offense on Sunday. And they're going to need him for the rest of the way. And he's well aware. Like, he knows this is year three. He needs to step up and start making plays, especially now with Hutchinson down.
And their offensive line, as great as the Lions is, the Vikings offensive line has really turned around. It's pretty good. And Darisaw is turning into a Pro Bowl player.
Yeah, I looked today. There are only four teams in the NFL who have two offensive tackles ranked in the top 20, according to PFF. It is the Lions, the Vikings, Darisaw and Brian O'Neill, and then the Eagles, Mailata and Lane Johnson, and the Chargers, Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt. I mean, those are like eight household names at offensive tackle. And that lets you do a lot of things offensively when you have guys like that bookending the offensive line.
Two things I want to bring up here before we get to the finish line. I'm curious to see if TJ Hockenson will be rushed out. You know, obviously, I think it would be a really interesting storyline given his season ended on a Kirby hit that, you know, was controversy generating.
Just a Kirby hit.
Yeah, well, Hockenson is practicing. There is some implication that he could be ready this week. I would guess no, but, you know, you add him to the mix. That's certainly a dynamic piece, even if he's limited in his rep count. And then the other thing, just because I want to bring it up, Isaiah Thomas, you know, he just got here. I know you shouldn't expect a whole lot from a practice squad or off another roster, but I'm just intrigued. I am. The athleticism is impressive. The frame is impressive. We talk about Miles Garrett and Trey Hendrickson. Well, guess who was studying from both those guys the last few months? And I talked to Thomas today, and him talking about the lessons he learned from both those guys and the things he, you know, emphasizes his own game, you know, not running past the quarterback, crushing the pocket. It's like, oh my God, this is the guy Aaron Glenn is looking for. And so he told me today he is very confident based on one day of being in practice and seeing the first and second down plan that he could play. Like he's, and so I'm curious if the Lions will take that risk because they're so depleted at the position or if they're just going to, you know, roll with practice squad options like.
Well, and to your point, Dan Campbell did say today that defensive end is one of those positions where you can insert guys pretty quickly and expect a rather seamless transition. Now, obviously, it takes time to learn a scheme and some verbiage, but the very simple job of, hey, go beat that guy and get after the quarterback is true no matter where you are. And so I think they will give him a shot because of that. They think that at that position, you can step in and play whether or not you grasp all of the defense right away.
Is the over-under on James Houston snaps 1.5, maybe?
0.5.
I thought we might make it through this episode without hearing James Houston's name, but it's only fitting that we save him for the very end, as Campbell does every time he runs through possible names to replace Hutch. I think he mentioned the janitor, the media interns, the parking lot attendant today, and then James Houston.
Let me tell you, Solomon Williams has a better pass rush than James
all
Houston.
All he said for Houston was, Houston's still here. I really don't expect, unless James Houston discovers a new gear in practice, that we'll see much of him, even in the wake of the Hutch injury.
If Campbell says he's here, he's in the room, or he's working, it's just it's not a great sign.
It's the most literal description of what he is doing.
What do you guys got for the line for this game? Does 2.5 sound right? Vikings given?
I saw 1.5 today, Stoney. I saw Lions 1.5 dogs.
Did Stoney bet it down?
No, I haven't bet it down, but
he put a Chevy Blazer on it.
Hey, I will say this because I'm usually bad, Birchie. I had the Lions in the over as a parlay on Sunday, so I actually did win a bet. I just think they're playing at home, the Hutchinson thing, and the Vikings are playing too good. I think the Vikings win by, I don't know, under a touchdown, but they cover, unfortunately.
I like the Lions. I think they're going to band together in the aftermath of what feels like kind of a crushing loss. I think this coaching staff knows how to rally these guys. And I think ultimately the Vikings aren't going to be 6-0. I have so much respect for Kevin O'Connell and everything they've done defensively. But I think this is the right team to counter what Brian Flores has done so well. I think it's a dogfight. I think it's a one-score game for most of the day. But I do think the Lions win and cover that spread.
Man, I think you could see to some degree the Dallas game coming. Nobody saw 7-9 or whatever, but I think a 2-score game was on the table. I'm really struggling with what to do with this one. I think it's not anything crazy to say, but you know, turnovers is just going to be huge, and the Vikings force them, and the Lions are doing a really nice job of protecting the ball offensively. But there's something about that stadium. There's something about that defense in that stadium that, you know, I know the Lions won last year, but seems it's honestly, it's the best stadium in the NFL. I'd love it there. And I encourage every Lions fan to go if you don't have to go in December or January, where you might turn into a popsicle the moment you step outside. It's a great experience, but I am going to take the Vikings in this one. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think it might even be a little bit of a shootout given the Lions' defensive issues. But I am very much looking forward to watching the Lions' offense versus the Vikings' defense, because I love, you know, those strength on strength matchups, and it's going to be a chess game between two of the best coordinators in football for sure.
By the way, you're right about that stadium. I was only there once, and it was for the Super Bowl, and it was the coldest day getting to an arena or stadium I've ever experienced in my life.
Tony actually skated to the arena right down Main Street.
Oh my God.
It was an icy avenue.
It was ridiculous.
I will share this. I was there for the last game of the Metrodome. So obviously late December, early January, and this was pre Uber days, and Dave Burkett from the Free Press called a cab. But like, if you know anything about a stadium, like, it's really hard to direct a cab to where you are. And especially when you're on the road, you don't know all the streets and details. It was negative 26 with the wind chill. And I just remember stepping out the door of the stadium and feeling like my nose was going to snap off. And so, like, it's like Phoenix. Like, nobody should really live there in July. Nobody should live in Minnesota in February. Like,
right.
It's they're not normal human environments. Stay indoors, but
it's why they're Vikings.
Obviously, if you get the chance to go to Minnesota as a Lions fan, you absolutely should. This episode, as all episodes, produced by Zach Clark, absolute superstar, and as always, thank him for putting up with us.
Oh yeah,
as I mentioned earlier, you can listen to this on the Odyssey app. That's free to download. We are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. We're on Stoney's 8-track and his Trans Am. All the places you can get your podcast. You could just, Stoney will pick you up from work and you guys can listen to it together.
He just discovered an aux cord. He's blown away by that thing.
He's retired. He's got time. He'll, you know, just $5. He'll pick you up.
Mm-hmm. I thought about doing that airport run for, you know, as a job, but nah.
There's still time.
If you were there, you would have seen Max Crosby spotted at Hertz Rent-A-Car in the Detroit airport today.
Oh, really?
No, not really.
I thought maybe yesterday was the, you know, their off day. Maybe when visited his alma mater.
No, we are not reporting that.
No,
I regret not bringing up Khalil Mack as a possible trade target.
Keep Dan Leach out of this, will you?
Look, subscribe to the podcast, listen to the podcast, rate the podcast. We appreciate all of it. For Will, for Stoney, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.